I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/thrive for 20% off your first order.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
Good day, good people. My name is Brad King, and this is the Downtown Writers Jam Video Podcast. Part of the Solid Listen Podcast Network. We're coming to you from deep inside the Jam Bunker. And as you can see, if you are watching us, it's holiday time here in the bunker. And while we lost Max earlier this year, we still got his stocking up. He will forever be with us. It was his favorite time of year. I don't know why. Maybe it was because I was happy, but he loved the snow. He loved hanging out. He loved presents. He loved all the paper and stuff that would be around the floors. I was wrapping stuff. It was crazy. So while I'm missing him this year, we are keeping him in our heart. Hope that you are doing well. Very excited today on the program. Sophie Cousins, who's just utterly charming and kind and nice. And we had such a lovely chat. Her book, Just Haven't Met You Yet, is out right now in England and the United States, actually North America, coming soon to Europe. Had a lovely conversation with her, and she's one of those people. She was a TV producer for 12 years before she transitioned into becoming a writer. And if you've listened to the program at all, that we've had folks that have made that jump, right, from TV and film into writing. But that's scary, man. Like, as an adult, leaving a career and doing a new thing, that's scary. And she did it. Now she lives in a place that I didn't know existed, the island of Jersey in the UK. I've spent a whole lot of time in Europe, a lot of time in the UK, a lot of time in England, never heard of it. So we talked a little bit about that. And she now has the writing career. She has two small children. She's written a bestseller this time next year. And when I was doing the little bit of research that I do for these programs, it was Good Morning America Book of the Month, I think in December, a couple years ago. That was a big deal. Like, she's done it. And now Just Haven't Met You Yet is out. And as we spoke today, she had just sent her draft off for her third book. So a lot of fun talking with her. Before we get to all of that, you know, we do some business. The Jam comes out every Wednesday. These video podcasts come out on Monday and Friday. A couple things you can do to help us out. Book lovers in your life, let them know about the program. It's a great way to find new authors. We interview people from all over the world, all across the publishing spectrum. It's a good way for them to figure out what they want to read next. Also, if you like what you heard, leave us a review, either over at Apple Podcasts or head on over to our Facebook page at The Writers Jam and leave us a review there. The video podcast series, what you're watching right now, you can always catch that at theridersjam.com if you don't want to listen to the audio, if you would like to see me. While you're at our website, a couple things you can do. You can sign up for our newsletter. You can read the book reviews. I'll be putting some more of those up. I just took a long drive and had, I think, 3 or 4 audiobooks that I finished. Driving to Alabama is a long way away from Pittsburgh. And you can also buy books. Click on that bookshop link, and you can buy anything from local and independent bookstores across the country. You can also support everybody on the Solid Listen Network. Click on that Patreon button, and for just a couple bucks a month, you will support everybody who's putting out shows. And Malls and Nicole have been building this network out, cranking out lots of stuff. And coming in February, we'll talk a little bit about this in the future, but we got a Downtown Riders Jam special thing that'll be going up behind the wall. So a couple bucks a month, support everybody. I appreciate you taking some time. I know we're after Thanksgiving now. We're getting into the holiday season. Whatever you celebrate, December seems to be a time that like all those holidays converge. And as you can see, if you're watching, that is beginning to sprout up here. So I appreciate you taking a little bit of time to join us here. I appreciate that. I know time is limited. So anytime you give to us, it's a big deal over here. I hope that things are going well for you. I hope you're getting all your shopping done. I hope most importantly that you're taking care of yourselves and each other. It's that time of year when we get to be unashamedly the people that we want to be all year. And I hope you are leaning into that because we need some of that goodness right now. For now, while you're cleaning, doing whatever holiday thing you're doing while we're in your ear, I hope you will sit back and spend about 25 or 30 minutes with me and my conversation with Sophie Cousins.
I am in Jersey, actually. Yeah, so I lived in London for 12 years and then moved to Jersey 7 years ago, which is, yeah, small island, Channel Islands, which is where my current book is set. So, yeah.
I've spent a ton of time over in England and in Europe. I've never heard of Jersey. Like, where is it? Like, is it between?
It's basically, yeah, you can see France. So it's kind of just off the coast. It's like an hour's ferry off the coast of St. Malo.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's kind of near Brittany, but it's kind of English speaking kind of part of the British Isles. But yeah, it's a very unique little, you know, it's a little bit sunnier than the UK, but there's all these like French road signs and amazing food, but it's kind of, yeah, culturally English.
How did you end up there?
Because my husband works in finance and there's a big finance industry over here. So he kind of came for a job and we never left, basically. But it kind of worked out because I obviously worked in TV before, which is very kind of, I worked in big studio entertainment shows, so very much in cities and sort of London and Glasgow and places. So I had to have a bit of a rethink coming to a small island with very little television. So kind of gave the writing a go and it's all worked out so far.
Yeah, like I grew up in a very small town of like 5,000 people. So like I've gone to the cities. Like, how was that transit? Because did you grow up in a small place?
No, so I didn't. No, so we moved all over. My dad was in the army, actually, so we moved all over the place. So I'm kind of used to being quite flexible about wherever I lay my hat. It's very much my home. So yeah, we lived all over the world when I was growing up.
So that's at least, it wasn't like that big of a shock of like, holy shit, like I'm in the middle of nowhere.
No, it wasn't. And also it's still only an hour flight back to London. So it's quite easy to go and visit people. Yeah. And it's like, it's small town, but it's also, you've got everything here because it's not, you know, there's lots of, and all, if you meet anyone that you like, they're only a 15-minute drive, which is quite good.
Yeah, that's totally different than city living where like literally your friendships are proximity based. Like you're a 5-minute walk. We can be friends.
You're on the wrong tube line. I'm never going to be friends with you. Exactly. Yeah.
I lived in California. I lived on the East and West Coast of America. Like that was always the joke. Like I had a friend of mine once that said, love is about proximity. Like if I love equally somebody that lives 5 minutes away or 30 minutes away, I'm going to be with the one 5 minutes away.
Yeah. Makes sense. Yeah. Makes all sorts of sense.
So how do you make the transition from, I've had lots of folks on the show that came from TV and film, but most of them came from writing. So how do you make the transition from producing into writing novels, because these are not, on its surface, related careers.
No, they're not really, actually. I think if anything, working in TV just made me see how difficult writing is, because I saw the process that the writers on the shows, you know, and how laborious even writing, you know, I mean, to be fair, I worked in comedy shows, so stand up is actually really hard to write, because it's got to be funny, which is, you know, harder than other type of writing. But I kind of saw a little bit of like behind the Wizard of Oz curtain of kind of what goes into creating funny writing. And if anything, it made me kind of more wary of doing my own writing. But I think that, yeah, I just sort of, it's always something I wanted to do. And I feel that writing books, I actually get to tell the stories that I want to write. Whereas when I worked in TV, I was always helping produce other people's stories, which, you know, was a very different kind of beast.
Yeah, well, and the thing that I've learned from TV and film writers is that it actually prepares you to write novels in a way that, like, traditional, like, what you schooling doesn't, because at the 3-minute mark, this needs to happen. At the 7-minute mark, this needs to happen. At the 12-minute, and there's no wiggle room. You can't come back and be like, I need 62. They're like, you don't have 62. And so you get that sort of tight format for creativity.
Yes. And actually, that is something that I find in the edit room of, you know, even if I wasn't writing a show, editing a show is really where the show gets made, in a way, because you realize where the lag is. And, like, you know, you could film a scene that was 15 minutes that when you were shooting it, it seemed hilarious and that you couldn't possibly lose one joke. And then in the edit, suddenly it's two and you're like, actually, it's just as funny, and if not funnier than it was. So yeah, editing, I think, is a good. I don't seem to have been able to edit my books nearly as well as. That's a good point. I should start thinking of those TV shows.
You just talked yourself into, like, oh shit, yeah, this is. Well, and I tell people, like, whenever people early in their careers are like, how do you know if you're a writer? I'm like, two things: like, if you read a lot and if you edit, like, because that, like, up in, like, the first draft is not writing. That's the first draft. Like, the actual craft of that comes in shaping it, and that's the horribly terrible boring part that nobody wants to talk about.
yes. And so actually, just literally this second before getting off on the phone to you, I finished the first draft that I'm about to send to my editor of my third book. Yeah, and I'm just reading it back, and it feels like the beginning. It feels like, right, here's the, you know, raw material, now let's, like, shape it into something good.
And you get, like, I think that coming from a career where like you had to shape and do that stuff, it makes that preciousness. It's never easy to send that first draft, but you sort of disassociate yourself and you're like, well, this is not going to be what it is. So
yeah,
be as hard as you need to be on this.
I mean, I think as a relative newbie, what I found very difficult is this, because I'm trying to do like a book a year. Because of this lag time, my second book is out, and you know, I'm getting lovely messages from people who are really enjoying it, and, like, you know, highlighting bits they've liked, and I'm comparing that with my first draft book, and it's, you know, and it's, you've got to really remind yourself, like, okay, that had a lot of work on it to get to that stage, whereas I'm just thinking, like, this book is not as good as the book that's out.
Well, and here's the thing: this is your third book, so you're not a newbie anymore.
Okay, I'm not a newbie anymore. Right.
Yeah, now like, you're in it. Like, if you're doing one a year, like, and I talk about this all the time on the show, like, the sort of trauma of success, right? Like, it takes your whole life to write your first book. And then if it does well, which your first book did well, they're like, where's the next one? You're like, do I get to enjoy this? They're like, no, we need another draft right now.
another idea, better idea, go.
And like, you, and then the other joke on the show is, like, you, to be a writer, you have to be narcissistic enough to believe that you have something to say, and self-loathing enough to think that you're not very good at saying it.
Yes. And actually, the more writers I meet, the more I realize there's a real, like, psychology behind being a successful writer, and it's nothing to do with success in terms of, you know, sales or money or contract. The success is all having the right psychological approach to writing.
Yeah, it's a hard, like, it's a hard business. Like, it's a hard, and I think particularly because of what you just said, which is, we write a thing and then you spend your whole life I don't need to look at the good stuff. I only need to look at the bad stuff. Only need to look at the bad stuff.
Yes.
Only need to look at the bad stuff. And you do that for a year and you're like, I am not good at this at all.
Yes.
Because you've hyper-focused on what has been wrong to fix it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. But it makes me sad that I've put all of this work into my book, This Just Haven't Met You Yet. And I'm getting nice messages from people saying, oh, this really spoke to me. This scene was so funny. And my first instinct is not like, oh, yay, go me. It's, I can't do this again. Oh, no, yeah. I'm never going to write anything good ever again.
Yeah. And the other thing, like the other thing is the other one that I always have is like, well, I don't think you understand this then. Oh, you think it's good? Like, yeah, I have a low opinion of you now. What? Like, how could you think this is good at all?
You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
So give me the little blurb about Just Haven't Met You Yet.
So Just Haven't Met You Yet. It is a rom-com set in Jersey where I live. It's about a girl called Laura who picks up the wrong suitcase at the airport. And when she gets back to her hotel and she opens the case, she sees in the contents everything she is looking for in a man. So this guy is reading her favorite book. He's got sheet music from her favorite musician. He's got this incredible like fisherman's jumper, which she's got a real thing for. All of these things that just make her feel that like the fates have aligned and she's been delivered her soulmate in a carry-on suitcase.
And then hilarity ensues.
Hilarity ensues.
It's really interesting, you know, like I've always like over the years, like rom-coms have been one of those like guilty pleasures of mine. Like I, and in the pandemic, the two things that I have read the most are thrillers. Apparently sitting in my house alone, I want to read about like murder people. And then I want to read like, oh, happy love. Like this is good. Like things,
yay,
at some point things might be good again.
Balance them out. Yeah. Horror and murder, happy love.
Yeah. I don't know if there, that's, I'm sure that's psychological. I guess I should probably talk to my therapist about that. Like, why does murder and love seem to be a thing that you gravitate to?
I think it's knowing what you're getting when you embark. I think it's the knowing the genres. So you just know what you're picking up and you're getting into.
Yeah,
it's not suddenly going to turn into something.
And like, as a writer, I read things differently than like regular people, because I'm always trying to unpack what you're doing. Like, that's how I read stuff, right? Like, so because it has such a fixed structure, it allows such great creativity to tweak and play with that stuff. And like, I think that that's why I gravitate to those things, because you're like, well, I know it's coming.
Yes.
How are you going to fool me?
Yes. You know what writing has ruined for me? Because so now when I read or listen to audiobooks, so one of the things that I find very difficult as a writer is thinking of original ways to describe body movements. So like, you know, he looked at her with like hooded eyes, or he rolled his jaw, or he kind of, you know, scratched his arm, or like all of these tiny little gestures that kind of put you in the scene and help you imagine the characters. I find those really difficult. So whenever I'm listening to something, I'm listening out for other ways that authors express kind of movement, not, you know, forget the themes, forget the jokes. I just want, like, you know,
I need a bunch of I need a phrase book of just like, okay, how are the ways? Like, because otherwise, because, you know, literary Twitter will lose their shit, man. Like, Franzen wrote some sex scene, apparently. And like, for 3 days on my Twitter, it was just people like, has this guy ever been with somebody? And I'm like, my God, like, he's written 1,000 books. At a certain point, you're just like, I don't know, this happened. So when you sat down to, like, when you decided to transit, when you decided to write, when you said, this is the thing I'm going to do, how did you know the genre that you wanted to be in? Or were you just like, I'm going to tell a story and then sort of find your way into it?
So I didn't know. So I before I was a published writer, I had dabbled with lots of different genres. Actually, I tried a bit of sci-fi, a bit of YA, a bit of slightly more kind of literary stuff. And I think it was, I then wrote I won a competition to have an ebook published called How to Get Ahead in Television, which was very much based on my own experience.
Yeah.
And that kind of just naturally had a rom-com vibe to it. And so then when it came to sort of what to write next, I kind of worked closely with my agent and a publisher on the, you know, what would suit my voice. And that's kind of how This Time Next Year was born. And I kind of kicking myself that I didn't really do rom-coms earlier, because what was I thinking trying to do like sci-fi?
Yeah, but you know what, like, it, like, I think, I mean, we talk about it all the time on the show, finding your voice as an author is the hardest thing in the world to do. It's the most important, like, I am convinced, structure, all that stuff comes later. You have to first figure out who you are on the page, and that takes time.
And also, I didn't think I realized that writing, you could just write kind of the kind of like your internal monologue. You know, you could write like quite kind of, it doesn't have to be like hugely literary descriptive, like the kind of books I write now is the way like my head thinks and the way people speak and the way that is like common parlance kind of thing. And that was, it sounds so obvious, but that was a real breakthrough for me, because I hadn't read a lot of books like that.
Yeah. But I think that comes out of the, I don't know how it is. I mean, I have some sense of how it is over there, but like, I know like the MFA world over here, you hear it all the time. Like, people are trying to get you to write a certain kind of way. And, you know, the example I use is romance writing in this country is gigantic, right? And there are women who churn out a book a month and make a really good living and have huge audiences. But you don't go to an MFA program to do that. Like, that literally has been a thing that has bubbled out of the community, out of authors finding their voices and then using these tools. And that to me is an amazing thing. And so it makes sense that you would be like, I didn't know you could just do that, because that's sort of not the zeitgeist of our world.
Yes. Yes. And also, I think from the English literature that I did study, it was always, you know, you were looking at kind of Milton and Chaucer and kind of examining these incredibly lofty themes. And actually, you know, recently I've discovered some amazing, there's an amazing podcast that's basically, I have to find what it's called, but it's like, you know, Fiction Writing Made Easy, which is literally like Idiot's Guide to Writing a Book. And I mean, it's so helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are they teaching this in schools? This is brilliant.
Yeah. I mean, I you know, as a nonfiction writer, I've often, like, whenever I've tell people, I'm like, I'm transcribing the movie in my head. Like, the thing that you're seeing is me writing this movie, and I'm just desperately trying to keep up with it. And if you went to an MFA program, they'd be like, well, here's a regression. I'm like, I don't know what the fuck a regression is, but like, I'm gonna step back for a minute and be like, hey, everybody, this thing, we're gonna go here for a minute, right? Because that's, I grew up around a campfire with people telling stories. And I'm assuming if you were in comedy, a lot of that stuff is writing on stage. It's writing in real time. It's like, things are like, it's not necessarily sitting down in a thing, right? Like, it's not in a room and just banging it out. Like, there's many facets to that writing.
Yes. Yes. And I do think as well that, you know, I when I was at school, I love reading, but I think I found lots of the kind of like, I don't know, grammar and tense and like lots of technicalities of a bit, like when I was at school, were not my strong point. And I think sometimes you can lose a bit of confidence that you could ever be a writer because you're not like brilliant at all of that stuff. And actually the stuff, the most important thing is being able to tell a story in a compelling way and keep people listening. And that is harder to teach than, you know, all the spelling that you can get an editor to correct.
Yeah, right. Like, it's why copy editors make a lot of money. I'm like, you're gonna see all the tenses in this thing.
Yeah,
it's supposed to be in, it's supposed to be in present, so just, you know, make that happen.
Just fix it, just go.
But it really is like, it's, I mean, anybody who's listening who's ever been to a party knows telling a story is hard, because you've been at a party and somebody's told a story and you're like, well, that was just a series of events. Well, that was not a...
Yes, and that was definitely a problem of working in comedy, when in the day I'd be with comedians who, like, you know, they are some of the best storytellers in the world.
Yeah.
And then you go to a dinner party and the person next to you would tell a story in like a non-professional stand-up way, and you'd be like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
Let's up the standard a little here.
Yeah, like, next time you tell it, you need to cut this, punch this up, and this is the kicker. Like, you need to get to that in like 2 minutes. Yes, it is why writers are also insufferable party guests.
Completely insufferable, yeah.
Yeah. Whenever somebody asks for a story, like, and I'm sure my girlfriend is like at this point nodding her head, because people will tell stuff and I'm just like, like, we need to, like, don't stretch it. I need you to, to cut that. So Just Haven't Met You Yet is out. It's out now.
Yes.
In like, both in Europe and America, or are we going to Waterstones to get that?
It's out in the UK and America, nowhere else yet. Time next year is coming out. It's been out in the US and the UK last year, but it's coming out in various other territories at the moment, which is really exciting to see. It's just come out in Germany last week and Czechoslovakia and all sorts of places. So yeah.
That's fun. My writing partner lives in Berlin, so I will send them to the bookstore to get that for Christmas. That's very exciting. And like, I always tell people, well, not people, writers, it's a big deal. Like, making that switch and sort of in a career and making the leap to give that a try and then being successful at it. And particularly in the pandemic, when you don't really get all of the stuff. Once you're done, right? You like, it's finished for you, but like, there is that niceness to seeing it in places and going out. Like, I hope that you pat yourself on the back, because that's a big deal to be able to pull this off in a time in which creativity is not always the first thing on all of our minds right now.
Yeah, and I think it's actually really hard. Like, if you know, anyone who's ever wanted to be a writer, you know, when you're at there is a stage where you just, you can keep going and you can keep trying and you try and write stuff and it doesn't happen. And like, the confidence it would, and self-belief that it would take, you know, I know writers who have probably written like 6 or 7 books before they've got one published. And like, personally, I just don't know if I would have had the self-belief to carry on. So I'm kind of very lucky and very grateful that the stars aligned for me to get published at the right time, because now I'm gonna do it. Now I'm not, you know, I can believe someone wants to read it, whoever they are, you know. But I do think that's a really hard thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell you, like, it's not lucky because, as you said, you dabbled with all kinds of writing. You were editing and you were producing around that stuff. Like, you were around storytelling for a really long time. Like, it's not luck. I'd never let writers say, like, the last mile is luck. The first 99 miles is, that is perseverance and learning the craft and doing the business. And we're terrible at telling ourselves, like, actually, I did do a lot of work on this and I do have a skill at this.
You're right. It's 99%. But that last bit, like, you know, you could write the best novel in the world and it's still just like, you know, you need certain things like book clubs and booksellers and everyone to jump on that wagon with you. Yeah.
That's the shit. Because, you know, how many writers do you know that, like, I know brilliant writers that have just never landed. And I'm like, well, you're the best writer that I know. Like, you're like, you know. And so, that last mile is, but good on you for, like, finding your voice and doing the thing. And, like, what a great,
thank you.
What a great thing. And I'm always, I'm always happy when I get to talk to a writer that finds that.
And also, I think as well, like, having worked in TV, the thought of going to another career and, like, being at, like, the bottom of the pile again and having bosses, like, I don't think I could do it. So I'm really grateful I get to be, like, self-employed because I love being self-employed.
I mean, anytime I talk to young writers, I always tell them, if you have a second plan, if you have a backup plan, you won't be a writer because this job sucks. It's horrible. The payoff is unknown. And so there's always escape hatches out. And so if you said, you're like, well, I can't go back to this other thing. Like, fear is a wonderful motivator.
Yes, exactly. I am not going back.
Yeah.
No.
I can't do it. Yeah. Death for me was always working in an office. I always imagined if I was in a cubicle, I did it for like a week and was like, oh, this is not going to work for me.
Spreadsheets give me like hives, like anything, anytime anyone wants me to open Excel or like make a kind of, you know, administrative formula, like no, take it away.
Well, you are lovely. Thank you for spending a little bit of time with me. I can't wait to pick up the book. Just haven't met you yet because it's the holiday season and that means I'm putting the murders aside. And
and pick up the rom-coms.
Like, I literally started my Hallmark and Lifetime movie watching, and so I'm going to be reading books along with that for a little happy joy in the season.
Yay, amazing. And bah humbug.
Yeah, bah humbug. Well, you have a great day and I hope we get to talk again soon when the next one comes out.
Thanks so much. Yeah, love you too.
Well, there you have it. That was Sophie Cousins, whose book, Just Haven't Met You Yet, is out now in England, in North America, coming out throughout Europe. Utterly charming. And so great when you find people who have made the switch of career, and not like another job, like left the career and started this whole writing thing and then stuck the landing. That's a big deal. And I love talking to people that do that because it's a terrifying leap. So when people do it and they do it well, God love them. Love talking to them. Before we get out of here, a couple reminders. If you like what you heard today, do us those two favors we talked about at the top of the show. Think about a book lover in your life. Tell them about our program. Help them find some new books. And leave us a review, either on Apple Podcasts or over at the Facebook page. Don't forget to check out all the other programs on the Solid Listen Podcast Network, including the flagship Mother May I Sleep With podcast with host and our Solid Listen podcast queen, Molly MacLear. These video podcasts coming out on Mondays and Fridays, maybe a little sporadic through the holidays, but head over to the Solid Listen Network YouTube channel. You can always catch them at thewritersjam.com, or you can catch the audio wherever you listen to the Downtown Writers Jam, which is out every Wednesday. Surest way to not miss anything we do, get yourself subscribed wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget, you can always catch us on Twitter and Instagram at The Writers Jam. Till the next time, I will see you around the internet.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new, or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.